The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
Hey, gentlemen, good morning.
Morning.
A few weeks ago, we talked about your consultation service. How's it going?
Going great. I'm loving it. It was a funny thing to start. Maybe we started about 6 weeks ago. Funny thing to start that people could book consultations for an hour. They could send in pictures, maybe rough plans, videos, and information about their garden in advance. I'd prepare, and then we'd meet for an hour, and then I'd send them a report. And I suppose we've done a couple of dozen so far, and it's become one of the favourite parts of my job.
Of your job. Okay. Yeah. So there's a fee to be paid, obviously.
It's €279 for that. And people can book on Instagram stories. I have a link there. And if you want to go and find out more or book it, just press that link.
Very good. Okay. I'm glad it's going well. Now, we want to talk about one of your favourite gardens, which is not too far away.
It's not too far away, and it's my kind of local garden of note, Parscourt in Enniskerry in County Wicklow. It's a remarkable garden, which sometimes I think suffers because it's so near and we don't maybe really appreciate its grandeur, its design, its the scale of the achievement that was undertaken to make such a garden.
Bring us back to the history of the land itself, who owned it and how it came into its current ownership.
So as with a lot of properties on this island, it has a basis of ownership that comes from conflict, I suppose. It was the British coming over and the plantations. So originally it would have been owned by Irish families, Irish clans, in particular the O'Toole family, who would have been very prevalent in all areas of Wicklow, but particularly in the Parscourt area. And it was one way or the other taken from them and granted to the Wingfield family as a reward for keeping down the Irish. And that is unfortunately, the history behind many of the great, because it was other people who had the money and who had the power.
And what happened, obviously, they took land from various families, the O'Tooles and others, and they decided to delineate the property by building walls. That's what they tended to do.
That's right.
So you knew the boundaries of the estate.
Exactly. And it certainly became a them and us situation. And that's what it was, one of the ways that the British enforced their power over the thing, to have, you know, the local squire up there who was very wealthy. So it wasn't only, you know, beautiful lands or whatever, it was farmland.
Well, who then decided to put manors on some of the land to create the gardens? Because all the land is not gardens. I mean, there's the golf courses, for example.
Manors is the most wonderful description of kind of all garden, gardening and all garden design, Pat. That's the first time I've heard that, but it's exactly, manors on nature is what was happening. So in 1609, they got the land, they started building the house. There had been the fort or whatever there for, you know, hundreds of years before that. But the 19 hectares of gardens that we see today were created by Viscount Parscourt in the mid-1800s. Now, this, you would have to remember, is around famine times, and that plays a big part in the role of the creation of the gardens.
Did they manage to give employment to locals who might otherwise have been starving to work on the construction of all of this?
They did. So they decided on a garden design, and to enact this design, first of all, they took influence from places like Versailles, from many great gardens of Europe. They had a garden designer called Daniel Robertson, who was a very interesting character in his own right, who did, probably an English guy, who did a lot of work in Irish gardens. And they decided on a plan of action. And the plan of action was to create this Italianate type garden to terrace a sloping site that had a bit of a stomach, they termed it, in the middle, a bit of a mound in an unfortunate place, because they wanted to borrow some landscape. They wanted to take a view that was in the distance, and that being the Sugarloaf Mountain, and have it as the final focal point. So to do that, they needed a lot of labour, and you could say they took advantage of famine times by paying local labourers from around the area 6 shillings a day to come and work when the weather was good. So they didn't work all year round, they didn't work in the rougher times, they worked when they could get good productivity. But this went on for 12, 13 years, 100 men shifting soil.
What are the features of the garden?
So the main features of the garden are these remarkable terraces and this and the Triton Lake. So the lake that's down at the end of the terraces, that was originally 15, 16 foot deep. They used all the soil that they dug out from the terraces and carving mounds. They filled in the lake, so now it's about 6 foot deep. So you have that, but then around that time and over the years, they built an awful lot more garden features. You have the herbaceous border, which is a double herbaceous border, 200 foot long, which is quite remarkable during the summer. You have the pepper pot tower, you have the dog's graveyard, you have the Japanese gardens, you have the woodlands, and you also have that other remarkable feature of the estate, which is the waterfall.
Now, the lake actually hosted boat races at one point.
It hosted boat races, it hosted illuminations. The Viscount and his ancestors loved to party. And the whole point of this was, yes, putting manners on the landscape and showing off and entertaining
now,
people.
Now, some of the majestic trees that we see now in this 21st century, they were only saplings when the garden began.
You know, I would say the tallest probably went in 150 years ago at about a height of 6 foot. It was on the way in here today. I was listening to a podcast with Alex Slazenger, the head gardener, member of the Slazenger family who now owned it, who's a really good head gardener. He was talking about the vision of the aristocracy back then in planting trees that would only be small. But if you drive up that beach avenue at the moment now, which is at the moment with our weather patterns changing and with the aging of the trees undergoing some turmoil, but it still looks amazing as it sheds its autumn coat.
Now, there are several things that people should know about. The great storm of 1939, how much damage did it do?
An enormous amount of damage, but as with any of these storms, it gave the opportunity to plant new trees. Yeah. So it was, that is nature. That's how nature works. So, right, because it's in a pretty... parts of the Parscourt estate are pretty exposed, pretty windy. That's why they would have created a wall garden to grow their fruit and veg, to create a microclimate. But nature will always play its part. So whether it was storms or whether it was the fire that came then in 1974.
Now, it was an inspiration to W.B. Yeats.
He used visit, it said, and walk around and take inspiration as you would from such a... But everybody used to visit. One of the kings of England was due to come, and when he was in Dublin, Edward the God knows what. Anyway, he was due to come, and he was due to visit the waterfall, which is very near. So they built an amazing viewing platform downstream from the waterfall for him to stand on and see. And they dammed the water to create torrent when he came. So almost at the press of a button.
But
he got a little bit drunk and he never made it, which is probably a good thing because it is said when they released the water, the viewing stand was washed away.
Now, it's been used in the movies.
All sorts of movies. A couple of years ago, I was there. I walked it there, the dog there an awful lot. A couple of years ago, I was there and my little dog started chasing an ambulance, which was being filmed. And I wasn't to know at the time, but this was to be a pivotal scene in a Hollywood movie called Cocaine Bear that Bowie, my little terrier, was.
Did he make the cut?
He didn't make the cut. He turned into a bear chasing the ambulance. But The Count of Monte Cristo, Stanley Kubrick, of course, filmed.
Barry Lyndon
up there when the whole house was lit just by candlelight, which was seemingly an amazing
absolutely
thing.
Fabulous. Well, it's a great place to visit. It's not too far for people who live in the capital, but even elsewhere, it's well worth the visit.
And it's been beautifully looked after, curated by the as I said, the present owners. It doesn't have that heavy touch of the National Trust. You can go and enjoy it and feel like it's your own.
Dermot Gavin, horticulturist and award-winning garden designer, thank you very much for joining us.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.